Hello, and welcome back to Horror Story Podcast. I'm your host, Trish, and before we get started, I just have to say we got our first taste of fall over here in New Jersey the other week. I mean, we just had this glorious run of like 50, 60 degree mornings, and I could just feel my happiness and the obnoxious basic white girlness bubbling up. Starbucks dropped the PSL, and although their pumpkin syrup kind of tastes like vinyl, you know I had to get it. Also, don't ask me why or how I know what vinyl tastes like. But then it was kind of a bit of a bummer because it immediately just went back to 80 degrees, and I was just so excited to be done with summer. Bring on the sweater weather. I'm also excited for this episode. It's been a little while since I've covered an urban legend, and I've got quite the duo for you all. Two figures so unsettling, they've definitely earned their spot on the spooky wall of fame. I'm talking about Bunny Man and Slender Man. It's gonna be a little spooky, a little creepy pasta, a little true crime, all wrapped up in one episode, so let's get right to it. On Colchester Road in Fairfax County, Virginia, lies a bridge that's become synonymous with our first legend. In 1904, in the nearby town of Clifton, was an asylum for the clinically insane. The residents of Clifton weren't too happy having the asylum in their backyard and pushed for it to be shut down. The residents won, and the patients were loaded onto a bus and shipped off to Lorton Prison. But on the way there, something happened. The bus swerved off the road and crashed, giving many the opportunity to escape. All were caught except for one, Douglas Griffin. Authorities conducted a search for Griffin. Scouring the woods, they came across mangled and half-eaten bunnies trailing along the forest floor, leading them to yet another gruesome sight. More rabbits gutted and hung from the Fairfax Station Bridge on Colchester Road. The search for Griffin continued with no luck. It was assumed that Griffin was surviving on the bunnies and also delighting in their mangling. Weeks later, on Halloween, a group of teenagers were hanging out under the bridge, but they never made it back home. Their bodies were found the next morning, gutted and hung from the bridge, just like the bunnies. The town was rocked, and both Griffin and the bridge had earned itself new monikers, the Bunny Man and Bunny Man Bridge. The legend went that if you visited Bunny Man Bridge on Halloween night, you'd meet the same fate as both the teenagers and the rabbits. So, too creepy to be true? Yeah, kinda. The Bunny Man is kind of a legend within a legend, and almost all of it is hard to corroborate. Let's start with what's not true. For one, there was never an asylum for the clinically insane in Fairfax County. Second, Lorton Prison didn't exist until about 1910, and even then, it was part of the District of Columbia's correction system, not Virginia's. And lastly, there is no medical or court record of Douglas Griffin, but there were accounts of a man wreaking havoc in Fairfax County, except he wasn't maiming and eating bunnies, he was dressed as one. Supposedly, in 1970, Robert Bennett, an Air Force Academy cadet, was sitting in his car with his fiancée on the 5400 block of Guinea Road, a rural area that was being developed into housing, when a man, dressed in a white suit with long bunny ears, ran from the nearby bushes and shouted, "You're on private property, and I have your license plate number." He then threw a small wooden-handled hatchet through the front windshield and skipped off into the night. Thankfully, neither Bennett nor his fiancé were injured. He reported the attack to police, and they began a search for the Bunny Man. But it didn't take long for him to strike again. Less than 2 weeks after Bennett's report, the Bunny Man returned to Guinea Road. He was spotted by a security guard patrolling for the construction company that was building the homes in the area. The guard, Paul Phillips, saw the Bunny Man on the porch of one of the unoccupied, newer homes. Axe in hand. Phillips approached him and attempted to question him. He became immediately upset and started hacking away with his axe at one of the support beams on the porch. The Bunny Man yelled at Phillips, "All you people trespass around here. If you don't get out of here, I'm gonna bust you in the head." Phillips attempted to go grab his gun from his car, but the bunny man again ran off into the nearby woods. While this is almost as unsettling as the account of Douglas Griffin, it's another one that's hard to substantiate. You see, Fairfax County PD has no record of the attack on Bennett and his fiance. But there is one that kinda correlates to the vandalism incident attributed to the Paul Phillips account. At 10:30 p.m. on October 29, 1970, six officers responded to 5307 Guinea Road for a subject dressed as a rabbit with an axe. The officers found nothing when they arrived, and then turned the case over to investigator W.L. Johnson of the Criminal Investigation Bureau. Johnson began by visiting the construction offices and surveying the site, but he wasn't able to uncover any additional evidence. Not long after he left the construction site, he received a call from one of the employees. The caller claimed to have just received a telephone call from someone identifying himself as the Axeman. Which, like, super convenient timing, but okay. The Axeman allegedly said, "You have been messing up my property by dumping tree stumps, limbs, brush, and other things on the property. You can make everything right by meeting me tonight and talking about the situation." The police set up a stakeout, but the Axeman, surprise, surprise, never materialized. On November 4th, Investigator Johnson received a call from a resident of the area who informed him that her 8-year-old son claimed to know the identity of the bunny man. Johnson interviewed him and eventually learned that he didn't know the bunny man, but had only heard the stories of the bunny man that had made its way around the child's school. Johnson conducted interviews with other neighborhood children, which yielded similar findings. By March of 1971, Johnson called it quits. With no other encounters or incidents reported, no other evidence obtained, and no clues as to the identity of the bunny man, the case was deemed inactive. So, who the hell was the axe-wielding bunny man, and what was his damage? Well, while we can't be sure, we can speculate. All the reports from the 70s center around Guinea Road and the bunny man's grievances regarding trespassing. At this time, Fairfax County was a rural farming community, and a lot of residents weren't too thrilled at the sight of the natural landscape giving way to cookie-cutter tract housing and shopping centers. So, some assume the bunny man was a disgruntled resident hoping to scare off demolition and development. And why the bunny costume? We may never know. But what we do know is the Bunny Man and Bunny Man Bridge is kind of an urban legend inception that's mutated over time and left its impact on Clifton and Fairfax County. It's a legend residents proudly embrace. The Fairfax Station Bridge is commonly recognized as Bunny Man Bridge, even by Google. The Bunny Man has worked its way into merch, its own haunted attraction during spooky season, and there's even a Bunny Man brewery located on none other than Guinea Road. Who's down for a road trip? All right, now we move on to our next legend, a figure whose imagery is so chilling, it's truly the stuff of nightmares. I'm talking about Slender Man. A humanoid creature dressed in a black suit, standing anywhere from 6 to 14 feet tall. He's faceless and ghostly white, disproportionate in his body, he has long, lanky arms and legs. And it's occasionally reported that he also has tentacles that emerge from his body to help ensnare his prey. Slender Man typically inhabits liminal spaces like the woods or someplace abandoned, but he's not shy about making his presence known as he stalks his victims. In fact, it's said that he enjoys the psychological torture, giving his victims what's referred to as slender sickness. He typically targets children, instilling both fear and trust in them. Those who've come in contact with Slender Man vanish without a trace. Pretty spooky, huh? This is a really interesting legend. Well, first, let's clarify that Slender Man is technically more internet sensation turned deadly than he is traditional urban legend. His story gained momentum really fast, like a runaway train, and it's crazy to think that it all started with a Photoshop contest. On June 8, 2009, a blogger with a username Victor Surge, who was later identified as Florida resident Eric Knudsen, uploaded two Photoshopped images to a thread titled Create Paranormal Images on the website Something Awful. The idea was to see who could use their Photoshop skills to create the best new cryptid. Knudsen was thorough with his entry. They were pretty expertly Photoshopped images of Slenderman lurking in the background of groups of children. They were captioned and presented as real. His second photo was even stamped with a fake library seal. In it, several children enjoying themselves on a playground smile towards the camera, while a tall figure in a suit with long and eerie arms lurks in the background. His caption claimed that the photo was evidence recovered from a library fire and that the photographer, and we're left to assume the children, are still missing. The entry was a hit, and just days after Knudsen posted his photos, fellow Something Awful users began uploading their own images and interpretations. Knudsen set the foundation for Slenderman, but didn't provide anything other than obvious details. This left his fellow bloggers with the ability to cultivate his mythos together. And these weren't your run-of-the-mill scary stories, they were real-life accounts. The first Slenderman story posted in 2009 has the subject, "I've been seriously debating sharing these, but after Victor Surge's posts, I feel I have to." The user recounts a case of missing teens who vanished while camping, claiming he was given a photo of the Slenderman by his uncle, a police officer still vexed by the incident years later. Stories of elementary school fires and missing children continue to pour into the very same thread that housed Knudsen's original. The thread caught the attention of one user and film student, Troy Wagner, who, along with his classmates and friends, Joseph DeLange and Tim Sutton, released a series of found footage-style short videos, a la Blair Witch Project, featuring Slenderman, which, of course, only generated more buzz for the character. Knudsen's creation and their YouTube videos would later serve as the inspiration for the video games Slender the Eight Pages and Slender the Arrival. As the story of Slenderman continued to gain traction, he begins to pop up on online horror forums, paranormal message boards, and even more popular sites like 4chan, Unfiction, Fangoria, DeviantArt, and the Mythical Creatures Guide, just snowballing him into stardom. Some even try to attribute history and truth to Slenderman, linking him with the German folklore legend of the Great Man, a tall, ghostly figure that lurks in the Black Forest and tries to lure children. Even now, when you try to research the German legend, results are almost always linked with the story of Slenderman. But according to Knudsen, his inspiration for the character came from elsewhere. Knudsen says, "I was mostly influenced by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, specifically his short stories, the surreal imaginings of William S. Burroughs, Silent Hill, and Resident Evil. I feel the most direct influences were Zach Parsons' That Insidious Beast, the Stephen King short story The Mist, the Something Awful tale The Rake, Shadow People, The Mothman, and The Mad Gasser of Mattoon. I use these to formulate something whose motivations can barely be comprehended and causes general unease and terror in a general population." The push to link Slenderman in reality and history only proves how powerful his image and lore was becoming. How desperate his audience was to flesh him out into something that wasn't merely to be feared, but believed. And that is really the objective of creepypastas like Slenderman. Also, let's discuss what the hell a creepypasta is and what it means anyway. Creepypasta comes from the term copypasta, which comes from the words copy and paste. Copy and pasting essentially describes how these stories spread. So, in summation, creepypastas are paranormal accounts, horror stories, or images typically presented as if they were fact, spread through the internet, as opposed to the word-of-mouth campfire style. When an entire corner of the internet is generating content for Slenderman and steadfastly emphasizing the content as truth, you can imagine how successful it would be for instilling fear in those who come across it, how after consuming it for a while, certain, more susceptible minds might truly, genuinely believe in it. And when that happens, how deadly the consequences can be. And that's exactly what happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin in 2014, when 12-year-olds Anissa Weyer and Morgan Geyser stumbled upon the Slender Man legend. Anissa and Morgan became entranced with Slender Man and frightened by his imposing and haunting imagery. They took it seriously. The legend became gospel to the girls. They became afraid that Slender Man would kill their families if they didn't become proxies and sacrifice someone to show him their devotion. To the girls, it was simple. They would offer Slender Man a life, pledge allegiance, save their families, and live in peace with Slender Man in his Slender Mansion in the Nicolet National Forest in Wisconsin. And no, I didn't make up Slender Mansion, but you know I wish I did. Morgan described their plan as necessary. After months of planning, the girls decided that their sacrifice would be one of their closest friends, Peyton Leitner. On May 30th, the girls planned to go roller skating, followed by a sleepover at Morgan's house to celebrate Peyton's birthday. Anissa and Morgan had initially intended to convince Peyton to turn in early that night so they could kill her in her sleep, cover her with blankets, and then set off together to the Slender Mansion. But the girls decided they were too tired from roller skating to go through with it. The following day, they all set off to the park, with the kitchen knife from Morgan's home in tow. Morgan and Anissa cornered Peyton in a restroom at the park. They attempted to knock her unconscious by shoving her head into a concrete wall. But it didn't work. Somehow, some way, they convinced Peyton to play hide-and-seek with them in the woods after this. Anissa and Morgan essentially hunted Peyton down. Anissa described their plan as, quote, lionesses chasing down a zebra. A fucking 12-year-old said this about hunting her friend down in the woods. I can't. Anissa handed Morgan the knife and told her, quote, go ballistic, go crazy, make sure she's down. Fucking hell. I hate everything about this. Morgan attacked Peyton, who was hiding under leaves, stabbing her 19 times all over her body. One of the entrance wounds barely missing her heart. Morgan and Anissa left Peyton for dead and set off for Slender Mansion in the Nicolet National Forest over 160 miles away. Peyton, because she's a badass, survived the attack and managed to make her way out of the woods and continued on until she found a patch of grass she could rest on and hopefully be spotted. And she was, by a passing cyclist. She was rushed to the hospital and immediately taken to surgery. Peyton survived both the attack and the surgery, getting released from the hospital just 6 days later. Morgan and Anissa were caught 5 hours after the attack. They were found sitting on the side of the I-94 freeway and immediately taken into police custody. Morgan was eventually diagnosed with early-onset schizophrenia and Anissa with shared psychotic disorder, which is where one person takes on some of the delusions or traits of the disorder of someone else's that they're close with. The girls were tried as adults and found not guilty by way of insanity. Morgan received 40 years to life and Anissa 25 to life. They were sentenced to serve their time in a psychiatric institution. Morgan still remains in the Winnebago Mental Health Institute. Anissa was released in 2021 on good behavior. Her release has conditions, of course. She has to remain under close supervision by her father, undergo mandatory psychiatric treatment, and have GPS tracking. She is also, of course, forbidden to have any contact with Peyton Leitner. If you're interested in learning more about the case and hearing some of the girls' interviews with police, which are pretty fucking chilling, there is a great documentary on HBO called Beware the Slender Man. Well, all right. That wraps up this week's episode. Please don't forget to leave the podcast a 5-star rating or a review. It helps so much. And thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you next time, and stay spooky, friends.